Hi, and welcome back. This is module 3 of our 5-part series on shipping your Office 365 app to the Office Store. This is the module 3, which is on building apps for the Office Store. I'm Scott Hillier, and this is Jim Epps. If you're just getting with us now and you haven't seen the previous two modules, you might want to either go back and check them out or check them out after you're done with module 3 here. But in any case, just recognize that we're in the middle of a larger 5-part course. And what we're going to do now is we'll throw it back over to Jim here. And Jim, tell us what we're going to learn in this module.
Thanks, Scott. Welcome, everybody. Yes, we're now in stage 3 of a 5-stage learning course around the store. And so far, it's really been about the value proposition for the store and also some demos. Now we're really getting into the nuts and bolts of how to leverage the store and how to get your apps in there. This session, module 3, it will be about best practices and really nuts and bolts, nitty-gritty, step-by-step on how to get yourself signed up for a seller account and then submit apps, and to avoid some of the pitfalls that we've had some of our partners hit when they submit apps for the store. So strap on. We're going to run through a bunch of material really quickly. The good thing is that the deck, which has, again, step-by-step instructions for everything you would need to do to get set up and going, will be on GitHub for download, so you can use it as a companion document when you're actually creating your account. And then at the end, time willing, Scott will do a drive-through of his own seller dashboard account to let you see what it's like to be in the seller experience in the portal. So that's it.
All right, great.
So let's get started. So we're going to have 4 sections to this agenda. One is just an overview of how building apps for the store is a little bit different, as opposed to building apps that could be siloed or put directly into your app catalog. And we'll walk through the 2 key pieces, creating an account for yourself or your company, and then adding apps once you have the account set up. And then at the end, we'll look at some of the common blockers that trip people up and make it a less than fun and optimal experience sometimes to submit apps to the store. We want to make sure you don't have that experience. This is the vision slide. We show it at every MVA module. Essentially, where we're going with the Office app platform have 3 key pillars. One is we want all of our products to be extensible and also to be surfaced in the same experience through the Office 365 tenant. If you see the My Apps window there, that's for your solutions as well as ours, so that now for the first time, third-party products will be first-class citizens in the Office 365 tenant and will be able to be launched right from within the Office experience. The second key pillar is APIs for everything, baby. We really want to make the app platform extensible across all the workloads and enable a web developer who maybe has never built anything on .NET or Visual Studio be able to pull data through APIs from any area of the Office platform, any surface area. And so we're working on building out APIs at a furious pace. And finally, open platform. It's really about open source. It's about non-Microsoft development systems like PHP, Node.js, Ruby on Rails. Those are future things we're trying to build code samples and documentation for right now. We have just recent released SDKs for Android and Apple, as well as cross-platform tooling on Xamarin and Apache Cordova. So we're really trying to create as open a platform as possible. That's the vision. Again, the store is a piece of it. So let's dive right in on how to build an app. On how to register and submit an app to the store. So first things first, the store submission process. This is a high-level summary. First, build your app, okay? There's lots of modes. Scott's done a ton of training on that. We're not going to talk about that so much today. The second thing is create a seller dashboard account where you use your Microsoft account, and there's the link to go. If you have one thing to point out here is if you have an existing Microsoft account, MSA, that you've used to submit apps to other stores, reuse it. That's important. The third step is to decide on your pricing and then add payout and tax information. So if you want to sell apps in the store, you need to add that component. The fourth thing is add your apps in one or more supported languages and countries. So you have some decisions to make around where do you want to sell your apps. Of course, any place you sell, you will also have to support. So hopefully you have multilingual people on your staff who can work the graveyard shift, so you're getting calls from China, there is actually someone there to answer the phone. So that's a key consideration. Then you submit your apps for store approval. And then once you have them submitted successfully, you can track them and manage your money. So that's the high-level overview, and we're going to go into more detail on all these things. So section one, in terms of the two key steps, the first one is building your app. We said we're not going to talk about it too much, but there are a couple of nuances to building apps for the store that may not apply if you're building apps for other types of deployments. If you go to dev.office.com, it will tell you how to get started in terms of setting up your environment. You can use Visual Studio certainly to create an app package and a manifest, but using the developer tools wizard, but you can also use other development environments besides Visual Studio. You also can, of course, build apps that work at the tenant level, the 365 level, that are registered with Azure AD. Those are not yet ready to deploy to the store, but they will be. And so we'll have more training once we've modified all the onboarding tools so you can actually submit apps for the store the same way you do for other, for SharePoint and Word, Excel, et cetera. So in terms of getting the app manifest store ready, there are some key things to remember when you're building for the store. Number one, because you're going to be hosting an app in the store as well as it being serviced in the product, you're going to have two places to enter the name of the app. Now that seems really simple. These people get screwed up on this step all the time. The name they submit when they build the manifest is not the name they enter when they put it through Seller Dashboard. So the customer sees name A in the store, and they download something, it's not called the same. I didn't buy that. I'm really upset. And so it'll actually fail. We prevent that. We make sure that that people are not able to submit. So app naming is very critical. The second one are store icons. Again, you're going to have icons within the product, within Word, Excel, PowerPoint, or SharePoint, which will represent your app. You'll also have an icon in the store. Those are different icons with different standards. And the submission process is a bit different as well. So that's another area where people have to be very mindful of, okay, I need two icons because I'm selling in the product, or I'm offering the product as well as selling through a store. The third thing to be mindful of is the Seller Dash is the place to enter client IDs and secrets for a SharePoint provider-hosted apps, because those provider-hosted apps have remote code that have to call into SharePoint. And when they do that, they need to get authorization without asking for the user's credentials. And so these client secrets and IDs are a way of doing that. You can, for apps that are not loaded through the store, you can actually register that the IDs and secrets right through SharePoint directly. That's not true when you're submitting an app for the store. So three things to think about. Make sure the naming is consistent. Make sure you have two kinds of icons and know exactly where to publish them. And also, use the Seller Dashboard to create client IDs and secrets. So that's some differences with the app manifest. That's all we're going to talk about in terms of developing the apps today. Now the rest of it is about submitting them and getting your dashboard account set up. So step two is creating a seller account in Seller Dashboard. Now, this is the exact same Seller Dashboard that Azure actually uses as well. So as our Azure and Office 365 stories continue to converge in the future, the good thing to know is you can at least create your account using the same tool, which is called Seller Dashboard. So there's a checklist. Before you actually go to Seller Dashboard and start typing in stuff, you want to make sure you have a bunch of materials and assembled and a bunch of decisions made so that you submit a good quality submission. The first thing is make sure that Seller Dashboard actually works in your country. Now, almost in every case that's true. There's a few isolated outliers out there where you cannot use Seller Dashboard, but if you go to this link in the deck, it'll tell you all the supported countries. It's the vast majority of countries in the world. The second key decision to make is what kind of account do you want? Do you want a personal account for just yourself, or do you want a company account for your development organization? The key thing to know here is once you've made that decision, you can't go back and change it. So if you wanted to create a personal account when you already have a company account, you'd have to go back and create a brand new account. So key thing to know. The third one is the marketing profile. Now, the Seller Dashboard walks you through what they want to see, but the key thing here is they do look at it. When you submit, there is a quality control team that looks at language, spelling, grammar, vagueness. They really want you to submit a compelling and useful marketing description. And it's not enough just to basically be grammatically correct, but it also needs to be vivid enough. It's going to grab people's attention. And so give some thought to your marketing profile before you start writing. And then, of course, make sure you meet all the guidelines. And there's a whole bunch of guidelines. One of the things that trips up a lot of people is not submitting accurate phone and address information. There's both a personal component to that and a business component, as we'll see, and you need to follow the instructions exactly or you'll fail. And people don't follow the instructions, and then they get caught up, oh my, I'm stuck in the seller dashboard pipeline, what's going on? Well, did you submit this information? Well, no. Okay, we're going to head off that problem right here by telling you how to do that. So here is the granular blow-by-blow. We're going to go through this very quickly because you're not going to memorize all this stuff. I don't have it all memorized. The key point is we want to call out a few areas that really trip people up. And then again at the end, Scott will show you a completed seller dashboard account. And the deck will be, again, available on GitHub if you really want to get granular and go step by step. And there's a lot of prompts, by the way, in the body of the seller dashboard system as well, which replicate some of the things I'm going to talk about here today. The first key point of advice, complete all sections, whether it's a personal or corporate account, company account, make sure you complete all the sections. Don't worry, this is not shared with customers, it's not put on the store site. This is merely used by the seller dashboard team to make sure that, hey, this person who says he works for Dell, he actually does. So we're not sending money to people in, you know, Kazakhstan or Ukraine or someplace else that, you know, is not where the account is claimed to have been set up. The second thing, and this is a key place where people do get tripped up, is under residential information, even if you work for a corporation or a large company, don't enter the company address or phone number. This is your personal address, your personal phone number, so that they can contact you in case there's a question or a problem. Again, this will not be posted anywhere in any publicly available site, but if you try to get away with using your company information, your registration will fail. The third key thing is, as I mentioned already, if you have an existing existing Microsoft account that's been used to sell apps on either the Windows Phone or Xbox stores or maybe in Azure, use that same MSA account with the same company name, description, address, etc. Here, we're trying to make sure there's not duplication of seller accounts, and so it's important to reuse the same MSA account. And then finally, select whether or not you're an individual or a company. After the first page, the actual implementation will fork, depending on if you're a company or an individual. So again, this is an irrevocable decision for at least the purposes of setting up your account for this particular purpose. So an individual marketing profile, the next page, the first thing is the display name is how you will appear in the store. So you shouldn't just say, you know, Joe's House of Apps. I mean, it needs to be something specific. And if you use an infringing name like Dell or Microsoft, it will be rejected. It needs to be something that's not only in use at the store, as well as something that's specific enough to really convey the brand value of what you're doing. Secondly, you submit an icon. There's a very specific size, and there's a very specific maximum size in terms of pixels, in terms of total file size, and a very specific set of formats you're allowed to use. And again, the tan box, as you can see on the right there, over here, actually shows you what those specific formats are. So again, there's a lot of help within the format, but again, it's amazing, Scott. People sometimes they just don't read the
form. It's a very precise set of steps that you're supposed to follow. Right. My experience is it works fine as long as you really pay attention. But, you know, it's sort of what I always like to refer to as big cup of coffee well rested. Just make sure that you're paying attention to each step as you go through.
Exactly. Yep. Good point. Okay. So moving on to the next step. Here you submit a concise description of your company's offerings and skills in plain text, and the value of your apps. And so keep it short. As you can see, there's 4,000 characters that you're allowed to use, but I wouldn't recommend that you submit a 4,000 character description. That would be a couple of tight pages at least. No one's going to want to scroll through that on your app listing in the store. You do get to use one bulleted list. And so we do recommend if you have some complex information to submit that you use the bulleting. And of course, make sure your spelling and grammar is correct. And finally, and this is a key thing that they will check for, submit a website where customers can learn more about you. They will make sure that it's up, that you own it, and that it's actually operating. So then you submit for approval, okay? Company submission is similar in terms of the top half of the the approval form. What's different is that you, of course, have a separate company address distinct from the individual's personal address information. So that's where you submit the corporate address information. Also, you may have a legal contact that you want to submit, and it may not be the person who's creating the account. That's what this legal profile part is all about. If you don't need that, just keep the profile checked, and you can just move on. And then submit a company contact other than yourself who can validate that you, in fact, do work for this company, that this company exists. Make sure it's an actual, don't put in junk in contact information. It may be an actual, or must be an actual contact information person so that the seller dashboard team can contact them and validate that, in fact, yes, this person exists and is really who they say they are. And then finally, you submit for approval. Now, your account, your seller dashboard account, moves into pending approval status. And approval can take, a few days, perhaps a bit longer. The good thing is, while you're waiting for your account to be approved, you can already start submitting apps. Now, you can't publish them to the store, but you can add them to your seller dashboard account. And while it's waiting for final approval, you can begin to queue up the apps that you want to publish. So that's the good thing. So, account approval. What are the things that the seller dashboard team looks at when they are approving your account? Well, as I said, it could take 1 to 14 days. We're really trying to get it towards the lower end of that range. 14 days is kind of long, and we've heard from you that that is kind of long, so we're trying to shorten that time. Certainly, the best way to avoid it taking longer is to submit correct information in the first place. If nothing happens in 14 days, then definitely go to the support link here and contact them to say, hey, what's going on? My seller dashboard account seems to be hung up in the approval process. The first thing that they look at is, and most importantly, for financial reasons and tax reasons, is to validate your identity. Is the person submitting this account who they say they are? This prevents you from being spoofed by impersonators, identity theft, etc. And it also protects the customer from being sold to someone who isn't who they say they are. Secondly, as I said, we check that if it's a company account, is the submitter really affiliated with that company? As we mentioned earlier, did the submitter provide a personal address and phone number? And just for disclosure purposes, we will tell you that we do use third-party agencies like Dun & Bradstreet to help confirm identity and tax information. The second piece is auditing the information in your submittal. So the marketing profile I've already described is really important that you have a vivid, concise, and grammatically correct and well-spelled and profanity-free, of course, marketing profile in your system. The second one is your display name and company name. Again, it can't be duplicative or generic. Obviously, if you're working for a company, you probably already have a brand that you want to tout, so that's not usually an issue. It's more, in some cases, for the individual developer. The website must be functional, as I mentioned. The company reference must actually enter the phone and say, yes, Johnny does work for that company that he claims to work for. I'm the head lawyer, I'm the VP or whatever here. I can validate that. And your developer Microsoft account, it needs to use the same one that you were using for other stores. And finally, the logo. And one thing about a logo, we do recommend that you scan them for viruses. That's also potentially a problem if you have a logo that has some sort of embedded problem in it. That's going to be rejected and, again, slow down your submission. So these are some of the things that they look at when they're evaluating your profile. Now, if you want to sell apps, not required, of course. You can also offer free apps, trial apps. You don't necessarily have to have a sales motion, but if you do, you need to add payout and tax information. And so essentially all you do is you go to the seller dashboard account, you click on the account tab, as you can see there circled in red over here, and then you click the payout and tax sub-tab, and that will take you to this experience. And so first thing you do is you choose a payment method, bank account or PayPal. You then enter your billing address and your relevant account information, such as your PayPal number, etc. And then you click Next. Then you go into the tax experience. Now, if you're a U.S. resident, a U.S. citizen, if you file your tax return in the U.S., essentially anything that would identify you as a U.S. taxpayer, you would click the top radio button and submit that way. If, however, your residency is outside the U.S., and most foreign countries, as you mentioned, are supported, you would click that radio button. Then you would click Next. If you had clicked the U.S. Domiciled option, you would be shown Form W-9. If instead you click the foreign one, you would be shown this information on the right. You would fill out a pre-form, and that would then trigger a link with an email and a PIN to the tax forms that would apply to your particular country. And success. So you've successfully submitted your tax and payout information, and you are now eligible to sell on the store. Yay! Okay, managing your account. Once you have the account set up, be aware that each time you edit your account, it has to go back through the submission process, which, yeah, that's a pain. The best thing, again, to prevent that pain is to make sure it's a good submission in the first place. So small changes like in a phone number change or an address change, that kind of thing, should not take very long. But it's a good idea to really try to get it right the first time so you're not constantly having to revise it 5, 6, 7 times because you have to go through the approval process each time. So some forethought, if I can convey any kind of sense at all of what the whole point of this module is be prepared. Sit down, get the materials together, and think through it before you start madly typing away into the seller dashboard form. Again, while you're in the pending approval status, because you've resubmitted your dashboard account with new information, you'll be in what's called account pending approval status again. It will not affect any apps you already may have published in the store. But what will happen is if you, for instance, you changed your phone number for your contact information, that will not then be reflected in the store listing until such time as your seller dashboard account has been reapproved. So again, if you know your number is going to change pretty soon, you probably want to get that flipped over in Seller Dash so that the apps have an appropriate contact information reflected in the store listing. So just pretty much walk through that next that last point. So if instead of needing a new item to be approved, there's an actual problem with the listing, you will see in your Seller Dashboard account a flag that says change is requested. So for example, let's say you submitted a website that turned out when they checked it to not be up. It was down, it was behind a firewall. There was some problem where a user could not access it. That would be a reason for them to say, you know what, this is not ready to approve because you need to change that information. And so instead of saying pending approval, it'll say change is requested. It'll also have a link which will take you to a forum that shows you what the problem is and how to fix it. Okay, so we've now so far walked through creating an account in Seller Dashboard. And Scott, I understand you said you have an app or two in the store yourself?
Yeah, I have an app that allows some list printing to be done from Office 365 sites that are in SharePoint. So I've been through the process and the tax payout information and all that, and for the most part, I found that process, again, to be something that you need to be very precise with. And Jim, your advice on being prepared is probably exactly the right advice. But when you get the account set up, the actual process of submitting the app is fairly straightforward. You're going to create that APP file and get it uploaded into the store. Again, get client IDs and things like that that you'll walk us through here. But I found the process to be reasonably straightforward in submitting it, and also pretty good on the turnaround time for approval as well. So my experience from that point on, pretty good.
That's good. Well, you queued up the next topic perfectly, which is adding an app. So whether you have your Seller Dashboard account approved fully or not, you can begin adding apps as soon as you've gone to the first step of being in the pending approval status. Now, if you're in changes are needed, then you know, you're going to have to go back and fix that, as I said. So again, just like with creating your Seller Dashboard account, you also want to make some early decisions and have a plan before you start submitting your first apps. So the first thing to do is familiarize yourself with the app validation, the store validation policies and the app validation checklist. I have links embedded here. Again, download the deck from GitHub and you'll be able to leverage those links directly, which will essentially replicate some of the things I'm going to talk about in a minute, but in more detail. I can't go through every single possible item in this format. The next thing is decide what languages and markets to offer your app in. So here we have I believe it's Japanese. Japanese version of the Wikipedia app. And so you can certainly submit an app in as many languages as we support. But at minimum, you're going to have to localize your metadata in the store listing, meaning your title, short and long description, version numbers, you know, what browsers are supported, all that metadata that you would park into your app listing. Much more preferable, though, is if you localize the app itself. The app code will show, you know, the UI, et cetera, in the app needs to be localized. So, Scott, have you gotten around to localizing any of your apps yet?
Let me ask you a question. What do you call a software developer that knows three languages?
A foreigner?
Trilingual,
okay.
What do you call a software developer that knows two languages?
Bilingual.
What do you call a software developer that knows one language?
American.
There you go. So that tells you how many localized apps I've created in my career.
All right. Well, that's fine. One thing we do want to do, and this is on the roadmap as well, is we want to create more assistance for folks like Scott and other developers who only speak one language to automate to some extent the localization process. The Windows Store team, they've been at this a lot longer than we have. You know, it's a much bigger infrastructure, but we're looking to emulate them to create some automatic language localization tooling, as well as have a concierge service where, for a fee, we will help you localize. Those are both things that we're looking at, but right now, the localization process is pretty much up to the developer. But quite a few of our larger ISVs have actually gone to the trouble of localizing their apps, in some cases in many, many languages, to get that global distribution and presence, right? The store UI itself is localized, but here's a key decision. Do I want to sell it in only one language or in many? For China, it's kind of a wrinkle. Because of security issues, because of the data center being within the Chinese boundary, just the legal issues are involved, you need to submit a completely separate app package, the app listing, pretty much all the elements, the client ID and secret, all have to be submitted separately, only for the China market, as well as you need to block access to any other country via seller dashboard, and we'll see how you'll do that in a second. So that it's a China only app in effect. So that's just a little wrinkle around building apps for the China market. And of course, as I always want to point this out, if you add a foreign language app, you're going to have to be ready to support that app, even if it's just community support or email support. It's not really fair to roll out a French app when no one in your company speaks French, or unless you can identify a resource to help you with that. So, and then the next big decision is set pricing. There's a number of options here. You can have a free version, you could have a paid version, and that can be paid per user or at the site or org level for the server-backed apps, Exchange and SharePoint. And the paid version can be either perpetual, you pay once, or you pay on a monthly subscription, which is automatically renewed until the customer cancels. And then you can also pair with any of these options a trial version. And we're going to talk about trials a lot in Module 5. Scott's going to be totally on center stage for that one, because we really feel that the trial app is the great way to drive adoption. It's the viral engine that will get people to, you know, we're talking about a store, we're talking about apps that people maybe aren't familiar with. If you get them to try it, and then you kind of nudge them along through the try experience to upsell them, that's the real win. And so we're going to talk quite a bit about how important trial apps are in the next, in session 5, module 5. Okay. One thing about trials, they are configurable. They can be anywhere from 15 to 60 days or even unlimited. And also the number of users who are allowed to participate in that trial. So trials are fairly robust in terms of what you can do. And then what happens at the end of a trial is actually up to the developer. So for example, at the end of 30 days, you can gently nudge them with a reminder email saying, hey, your trial's coming to an end. Do you want to upgrade to the paid version? You could begin to disable certain functionality, or you can turn the app off altogether, or you could do nothing and essentially use that time to continue to nudge them and then opt to turn it off at some future date. But a trial does give you the ability to engage in a discussion with your customers. All right, now here's the checklist of things to have prepared in terms of content before you submit the app. The first thing is the wording for all the text entries, the title, the name, the short and long description, all localized. Again, if you're going to sell it in France, you want to have French counterparts to all these different text elements. The next one is the metadata, things like the app version number. And that version number is very important. That's a thing that commonly trips people up, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. The release date. If you want to park it, well, we definitely recommend that you're required to have at least one browse category. I showed you the browse category structure of the store earlier in a different module, in module one. We can host your app into up to three different browse categories so that people can find it. If they're clicking through it and say, I only want BI solutions or I only want workflow solutions, if you park your app in the workflow category, they'll find it within that experience. The logo must be compliant, and then 1 to 5 screenshots. Screenshots are really important because they make the app come alive in the app listing. People can click on the screenshots and see what it looks like to be in that app experience, the colors, the fonts, the way it interacts with Office. Screenshots are a very important asset to submit, and so you want to spend some time on making them right. Testing notes. Testing notes are where you can give private information to the Office testers only. This is not shared with the public, so that they can validate the app more easily. Things like if you have a test environment, you give them the login credentials. You can give them instructions like, here's what I'm trying to do here. Make sure you test it like this so that you are fully capturing what I'm trying to do with the app, that sort of thing. And then links to your support documentation and privacy policy. We require any app that's in the store to have both a privacy policy and support documentation. And so you need to provide links to that, which will be tested during the validation process. And then optionally, you can post links to a video that which can be hosted remotely. And if you want to also have a custom end user license agreement, a EULA, that's not the one that Microsoft posts by default, you can also have a custom EULA. So now we're gonna do a walkthrough of, again, a blow by blow, very quickly, of how to add an app through the seller dashboard. First thing is you click Add a New App in the seller dashboard Manage tab, as you can see here. This will then pop the first page of the form, which asks you to specify what kind of app you want to publish. Is it app for Office? Is it a mail app, app for Outlook, or an app for SharePoint? Again, in the future, we will also enable you to potentially publish apps for 365. That's something you'll see coming in the future. And as you notice there's also the ability to publish apps for Azure. Again, we're starting to converge some of the tooling and the developer onboarding and publishing methodologies, both for Office 365, or Office, I should say, in Azure. So that's another, we're not going to talk about Azure so much in terms of publishing today, but Seller Dashboard is the place where people start for Azure as well. Oh, and one thing I neglected to mention on this page is the terms and conditions that you're accepting are posted here, and you can always come back to this link to see the terms and conditions, and you may have multiple ones if you're submitting for multiple stores. They're always housed in this repository, the Office Store Agreement, down at the bottom. Okay, app overview. The next thing is essentially the basic metadata for the app, the title. It can be 15 to 50 characters, but we recommend you aim for 20 characters or less. The second one is the version number. This is really important. The version number you submit through the seller dashboard must exactly match the decimal point, the number of zeros, whatever, the manifest version number. That's one of the most common ways that people fail app submission, is they don't match the app version number in the manifest with the one that they submit through seller dashboard. And then the release date. This is the date you're submitting it for publication. It's not necessarily the date it'll show up in the store, because that's, of course, dependent on when it's approved. And then the categories. I've mentioned this already. Pick 1 to 3 categories. Now, if you submit crazy ones, if it's a BI app and you want to submit it for photo insertion, something like that, the store team is going to say, well, that's not really a valid category. They will have the right of refusal if you submit inappropriate categories. But here's where you submit your categories that you think are best for the application. Then you submit a logo. And again, the formatting, the size, and et cetera, is all discoverable by just rolling your mouse over the logo. And you can see the format you require, the format that is demanded as part of the submission. Okay, the second part of app overview. Here's an optional place, again, to link instructions. This is the testing notes that I alluded to earlier. Again, it will only be used by the internal test teams, not published to the public. And then if your app uses or calls or contains any cryptography or encryption, you must specify here and for which tasks. And if it uses limited cryptography, you click yes. If it doesn't, you must provide the cryptography number, the ECCN number. So that's just to make sure that they fully understand what kind of encryption you're using, if any, on the app. Here's where you submit your links for support and privacy policy and your optional links for your demo video site. And then finally, your custom user agreement, your license agreement, if you so choose. If you don't, then Microsoft will furnish their standard EULA as part of the when the customer acquires the app, they'll be shown that. It'll be they'll click on it to agree as part of the process. Now here's where you submit the app details. First, you choose the language to publish the app in, and you go through, once you fix the English or whatever language else you choose, you go through this process, and there's you pass through this page process each time you want to submit a new language. So again, make sure that it's localized for that storefront optimally. So if it's in French, and maybe Excel tips and tricks will work okay in some languages, but obviously if it's going to be in Chinese or Japanese or a non-Roman alphabet type of language, it's going to be indecipherable to most people, so it's optimal to submit the localized version of that. The short description can be up to 100 characters. Again, localize that. The long description up to 4,000. Again, that's way longer than it really should be, but that's you could go that long if you really wanted to. And then finally, 1 to 5 screenshots. And make sure the screenshots exclude any personal or private data, so it should not have a URL in the screen or a password or anything like that in the header, phone numbers, anything that you might see. So you want to use a dummy account. It must be an actual app running live on a licensed version of Office. So it can't be something you Photoshopped. It needs to be an actual screenshot of the app while it's in action. And that's important. And of course, there's an exact size, it must be as well, to fit within the footprint of the Office store listing. Again, scan the screenshots and the logos for viruses before you upload. And then you repeat it for each language. The block country access page. This is the next one you come to, 4th out of 5. Regardless of whatever language you want to support, you may decide you don't want to sell it in certain markets at all. Now, Microsoft has a corporate policy. We don't sell Office 365 in certain countries like North Korea and places like that. But you also can choose to block that app for whatever reason in certain countries. Now that you've done that, you submit the app as a draft. And now you set pricing. You choose your pricing model. It can be free, one-time purchase, or sold as a subscription. The pricing must be at least $1.49 per user to cover our administrative costs, but you can increment that up higher, anywhere up to $999. And we actually have a $749 app in the store, Scott. So
yeah, be interested to see what that one does.
Yeah, it's a pretty good app. So. And then you can cap the max price again by, it could be a per user price, but you could say, I'm going to cap it at 10 users, 20, 50, 1,000 users, so that at some point people don't pay anymore as they add users. That's your option. And then you decide if it supports a trial. You set the trial length, again, 15 to 60 days, and the maximum number of users allowed on that trial. And again, as I mentioned before, your app code determines what happens at the end of that trial. Does it stop working altogether? Does it reduce the functionality, et cetera? That's a business decision that you should make. And then you save your app as a draft. Now, once you're in draft mode, you can always come back and re-edit that app. You haven't yet published it to the store. You're not bound to your decisions yet. So you're still in kind of a staging environment, so to speak. And so here you have some latitude in terms of you haven't submitted it. So it's not like creating the account. You haven't yet submitted it for approval, and so you can keep tweaking it. It's not going to delay your submission time. Once you are ready, though, you submit for approval. And once everything's approved, the app should be publishable to the store within 24 hours to a maximum of 3 days. As I mentioned in Module 1, the average time is about 1.3 days, so it's much closer to the lower end of that scale than the higher. So, a bit about the unique needs of SharePoint provider-hosted apps. These, again, are ones that have remote code that have to authorize into the service, and you want to make sure that that can be done without having to prompt the user for credentials. And so we have the notion of client IDs and secrets. So this is very specific to just the SharePoint provider-hosted app scenario. If it's a SharePoint-hosted app, it's all within the SharePoint environment. You don't need this. I'm just going to quickly click through these. You must use Seller Dashboard. That's the short answer, is you must use Seller Dashboard to create these client IDs and secrets. Again, for sideloaded apps, for apps that are not provisioned through the store, you can use SharePoint, and any site and forum has the app reg new ASPX page where you can do it there. That will not work in the store. You need to do it through Seller Dashboard. And then you go, once you have the client ID and secret, you go back to your app manifest in Visual Studio, and you replace the temporary IDs and secrets there. So one nice thing about registering your apps through the Seller Dashboard process, even if you don't actually plan to sell through the store, is you get more flexible support for your client IDs and secrets. It will store all the information, as we'll see in a minute, except for the actual secret itself, but it'll store the client ID, when it was created, when it expires, all that kind of thing. And you also get more flexible time frame. Instead of 1 year, which is the default when you do it through SharePoint directly, you get up to 3 years, and you can set that as your time. And you can create these IDs and secrets now and associate them with a particular SharePoint app later. It doesn't have to all be done at the same time. So very quickly walking through the IDs and secrets workflow, each app has a unique client ID. You could have more than one ID associated with a secret, but we don't recommend that in most cases. So first choose a name for that client ID that you can remember. Then provide the domain name where your SharePoint app will run. And there's some caveats there that I'll skip past. And then you provide the redirect URL to send users to after they agree to your app's access requirements. And finally, you set the client secret. Again, it can be between 1 and 3 years. At the end of that period, whatever you choose, you will need to update that secret or else the app will stop working. So this is really critical. And then again, if you're submitting to China for the China market, you need to have unique client IDs and secrets for just that market. You click Generate Client ID. And the critical finishing steps, save the secret someplace where you know you'll be able to find it later, and that will be durable, and click Done. Because you can track most of the information about client IDs and secrets within the Seller Dashboard experience, but not the secrets themselves. They're hidden within Azure ACS, and so if you lose it, if you forget it, you're kind of hosed. You got to start over again.
Yeah, you got to make a new ID.
Yes.
Right.
Yep. Okay, so to create, and then this just walks you through how to associate the ID and the secret to the seller. To the SharePoint app within the Seller Dashboard experience. Okay. So managing your app's performance. This is after you've created the account. You have apps in the store. Just a couple slides about how that works. First thing is how to unpublish and delete an app. You go to the Apps Manage tab, and that's if you want to remove your app from the store because there's a problem, or because you want to completely remove it, you don't want to have an older version, and you want to replace it with a new version. Then you can completely delete the apps from Seller Dashboard once they're unpublished from the store. If the app is still published in the store, you cannot delete it. So first you unpublish it, and then you delete it, essentially. To track your app and how it's selling, you have App Metrics. So here you can track reviews on the store, how many weekly visits you're getting, how many downloads, how many trial and purchases you're getting, both seat and site licenses. And right now, there's also the ability to download metrics via the comma separated values into Excel, so you get more rich data that way. And there's where you do that, in that arrow. And then if you click sales and tax data, you can see a report on how much money you're making in the store. So if you look at this screen to the right here, that is the graphical representation of your visits, downloads, purchases, and trials for this particular app, the DataBurst app, The screen on the left here is a summary of all your apps. This is now a drill down into the Databurst app to show you information on how that's doing. And then here is the sales reports. So you can essentially consolidate all your sales across all Microsoft stores. So if you have a Windows phone app or a Windows app, you'll also see sales data in here. And you can view by month, by region, by country, by state, by marketplace and currency. And it will show gross amounts. So that's before we take our administrative fee off the top. And so that's how that works. And then for Office, each store has a little bit different payout policy. For us, we pay out when your account accumulates $200, and payout typically is 45 to 60 days after that period's first sale. So to wrap up here a bit, we're going to talk about what are the key things that most people get hung up on when they're trying to submit an app to the store. So for as far as account creation, this is the first step, creating a seller dashboard account. Fake data will always get you shot down. Secondly, as I mentioned earlier, using your business phone number and address in the area that asks for personal contact information. Incorrect tax data formats. You need to follow the tax data form to the letter. So if it says the number has to be followed by a dash, put in the dash. You need to really follow that carefully. Spelling and grammar errors, vague and incomplete descriptions, those are the key things that get people stopped during the account creation process. In terms of the app submission process, here's the checklist of things that commonly stop people during that experience. First one is, the number one mistake is the app version number in the manifest is different than the one in Seller Dashboard. I've already talked about that. Other ones, the privacy link doesn't work. The support URL doesn't work. The app fails to disclose that it doesn't work in Internet Explorer 8. That's a requirement. And so it's fine if it doesn't, but you just need to disclose it within your metadata. Of course, if the app doesn't plain work, that's also not going to get you through the approval process. Now, this is one that people don't really think about. In the manifest, the app package needs to have a supported locales element. Even if you're only selling in one market, you need to specify within the app package at least one supported locales in that element. And then if you're not sure that people are going to get what you're trying to do, if you want to explain what's going on, again, use the testing notes so that the app validation team can clearly understand what you're trying to do. And then, of course, avoid obvious bad stuff. No viruses, no offensive content. Trial app functions. Now, it's fine to have a trial app that is not as fully functional as your paid version. That's kind of the point, really. Say, hey, you can do X, Y, and Z in my trial, but if you want to go from 10 records to 10,000, that's the paid version. If you want to have two users, or now you want to go to 200, that's the paid version. But it cannot be so crippled that effectively it doesn't do anything. So you need to have some baseline functionality. And remember, it's your calling card as well. So the trial app must have some reasonable functionality within it. If you process credit cards, the app must be PCI compliant, the credit card data standard and security standard. If you use updates, if you update your app, do not go backwards. Do not degrade the functionality of the app. Go, ooh, I gave away too much. That's not good. You may want to instead create a paid version where you more accurately capture what you think is the value, but don't go backwards and degrade an app, because that's going to create a lot of customer unhappiness, lead to bad reviews. It's not very smart. If you have past agreements, if your EULA says I will do this, you need to continue to do that, even when you're updating pricing or support terms. Make sure that if you have an app that is supposed to be touch supported, that it actually does support touch. It's a touch ready app. Respect all copyrights and trademarks, obviously. Don't have violating logos. And this is a key one right here. This is one that people get hung up on quite a bit, Scott, is when you're loading through the store, we will not accept apps that request full control permissions or be auto-hosted, meaning that you know you're publishing and it's going to be hosted on Azure for free. The reason for the full control one, and people get wound around the axle about that a little bit, is that it's a security issue. If you have set permissions at your SharePoint environment and you now have this app saying, hey, I want to give this person the ability to create a new site collection, but they're not supposed to be able to do that within the SharePoint environment, we just can't allow that. We understand there are some apps that want to do that just to create an app-specific site collection.
Right.
But right now, we block that. We're actually looking at that because we understand that that in some cases is really a pain point for our developers. But just be aware, right now, the current policy is no full control apps within the store experience.
Yeah, I mean, that provides an awful lot of power to an app, and it really just isn't something that in the current set of granularity, what we can and cannot allow people to do. It just doesn't play well with what we have. You know, it'd be great going forward to think about something like a specific can create site type of permission, but we don't have that right now.
Right. Okay, so that pretty much wraps up the do's and don'ts. I know it's very nuts and bolts kind of presentation, but you can revisit all the guidance in the PowerPoint, and Scott's going to just quickly show you his Seller Dashboard account, and we'll call it a day.
Yeah, I think what we do is maybe just touch on a couple of things, right? So if you were going to get started with this, remember the very first thing that you need is you need a Microsoft account. So the place to really start the entire sequence here is go to signup.live.com, and we can jump in here and just take a quick look at some of the pieces. So if we go to signup.live.com, we're going to be able to create an account. So you can use an existing email account that you want to be your Microsoft account, or you could create a new one. So for example, I could say, you know, Microsoft Virtual Academy, MSVA5, or something like this at outlook.com, which will give me a new Microsoft account. So that's the key thing. All this stuff hinges on having a Microsoft account. Once you have a Microsoft account set up, then the next thing you're going to want to do is you're going to want to go to the Seller Dashboard and register. So that's this second link here where we could say sellerdashboard.microsoft.com registration. And then in here, when I go to that registration link, it's going to ask me to sign in. And I would sign in using that account that I just set up. And I would walk through then all those steps that you showed us about how to register it. And if I wanted to sell, I'd have to provide the tax information and that type of thing. Finally, you can just then go to the actual Seller Dashboard. So if we come in here and say, you know, let's just go directly to the Seller Dashboard here. Go ahead and paste that in. Then I have an account already set up that we can kind of goof around with a bit. So I have one tied to Scott Hillier at Outlook.com. And we'll go ahead and log into the Seller Dashboard here and just get a quick look at the Seller Dashboard. You know, this is one I kind of set up for us to fool around with. You can see it's asking me for some updated information here. So this is not one that I'm really actively selling things out of, but we can see some of the things you talked about. So for example, I can come in here and add a new app. I've got a very simple app here that's just a calculator. So here's a little calculator app I put together. You know, we can come in here and say 1 + 2 = and then use that value 3, right? So a little calculator app you might want to sell. And if I come back here and say, let's go ahead and add that, brings me to a new spot where I say, hey, this is an app for SharePoint. Click next. I get to do all these things with the title and the version like you were talking about. And here's that one place you were saying everybody gets hung up on the version. If I come back to Visual Studio, I can look in my app manifest here, and you'll see that the version here is one with 3 zeros following it, right? So it's also kind of helpful in Visual Studio to right-click this and look at the actual underlying XML, where I can more clearly see what the actual version is for this app. And I can copy that thing out, come back here, and that's exactly what I would paste in there, right? So here I am picking all the different categories, the logos, and then I'm going to say where my app package is. So I'll click on this, and then I can come into my calculator, and I would be looking for that .app file here. Here, this is just the debug build. Obviously, I would build that with the release version when I put it up there. But the point is, you're going to grab that .app file that you had before and then upload that. And then you just kind of work through those steps, and you end up with your listing. You can see, again, the other things that you had mentioned there as well. And then we won't see the actual app here, but then the other two places that you mentioned were, now my little sample there, what I was fooling around with was a SharePoint hosted app. SharePoint hosted apps don't have the same client ID requirements as a provider hosted app. So it's actually very simple if you create a SharePoint hosted app to upload, because you won't be required to go get a separate client ID. But if you make a provider-hosted app, which is hosted inside of Azure instead of hosted inside of SharePoint itself, then you'll need a client ID, and then you can go to the client ID section there and generate a new client ID. So if I come in here and say add a new client here, you can just see that it's going to allow me to fill out the information about where this is hosted and get a new client ID. Key things here for you, I'm not sure you'd mentioned this, Jim, but key things here are this app domain and app redirect URL is going to be based on the Azure website where this app is hosted. So if you get confused about those two values, those are areas where I've seen people get confused. They just come from the actual Azure website values that you have. And then finally, the last thing you can see here on my seller dashboard is the metrics section. This obviously isn't going to have a lot for me now, but this is where I would go to get that information about how things are selling and how I'm managing it. So you know, the key thing here is that it's a reasonably straightforward process. You're going to go get that Microsoft ID, then you're going to register it with the seller dashboard, then you're going to upload the app that you want to sell. I think the thing, Jim, that you've really driven home to us over and over again is that the process is not difficult, mm-hmm. but you need to be prepared and precise as you walk yourself through this, and then you'll be successful.
Exactly. Yeah, this is your calling card. This is the submission process and the content you're providing. That is what the user will see when they go to the store. And so it needs to be good. You're competing against other apps. It is the way it's your bulletin board, your billboard for your solution.
Great. Well, I think we've covered all the things that we need to cover for that. We have anything we need to do before we wrap?
No, I think we're good.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for spending some time with us. We've still got a couple of other modules left in this course that will examine even further how you can be successful with store apps. But other than that, we're all done, and we'll see you at the next module.
All right. Thanks.